Afterward. Robert Edward Lee. In August, he asked to be relieved of command. Of the battle, he says, "No blame can be attached to the Army for its failure to accomplish what was projected by me. I alone am to blame, in perhaps expecting too much of its prowess and valor. Could I have foreseen that the attack on the last day would fail, I should certainly have tried some other course. But I do not know what better course I could have pursued." His request is not accepted, although he cites his poor health, and he serves until the end of the war. He never again attempts a Napoleonic assault. When the war is over, he believes that the issue has been settled by combat, that God has passed judgment. He lays down arms, asks his men to do the same. His great prestige brings a peace which might not otherwise have been possible. He asks Congress for pardon. It is never given. Dies of heart disease in 1870, perhaps the most beloved general in the history of American war. James Longstreet. That winter, he requests relief from command on the ground that he no longer believes the South can win the war. Lee prevails upon him to stay. He is wounded severely in the Wilderness, 1864, but returns to be Lee's most dependable soldier, his right hand until the end at Appomattox. After the war, he makes two great mistakes. First, he becomes a Republican, attempts to join with old comrade Grant in rebuilding the South. For this, he is branded a turncoat. Within 2 years of the end of the war, is being referred to by Southern newspapers as the most hated man in the South. Second, as time passes and it becomes slowly apparent that the war was lost at Gettysburg, Longstreet gives as his opinion what he believes to be true, that the battle was lost by Robert E. Lee. This occurs long after Lee's death, when Lee has become the symbol of all that is fine and noble in the Southern cause. The South does not forgive Longstreet the insult to Lee's name. At the great reunion years later of the Army of Northern Virginia, Longstreet is not even invited. But he comes anyway, stubborn to the end, walks down the aisle in his old gray uniform, stars of a general on his collar, and is received by an enormous ovation by the men, with tears and an embrace from Jefferson Davis. His theories on defensive warfare are generations ahead of his time. The generals of Europe are still ordering massed assaults against fortified positions long years after his death, in 1904, at the age of 83. Richard Ewell serves with courage until the end, but as a corps commander, he is fated never to achieve distinction. Of the Battle of Gettysburg, he is later to remark, "It took a great many mistakes to lose that battle, and I myself made most of them." Ambrose Powell Hill. Never to take his place in the Richmond society he so dearly loved, so richly deserved. 5 days before Appomattox, at the Battle of Five Forks, he is killed by a sniper's bullet. John Bell Hood loses not the arm, but the use of it. It remains withered within his pinned sleeve for the rest of his days. Complains bitterly about the handling of the army at Gettysburg. Is later given a command of his own, the Army of Tennessee. Defeated in Atlanta by Sherman, he spends much of the rest of his life justifying his actions in the field. Dorsey Pender. His wound grows steadily worse. An operation is performed within the month at Staunton, but he begins to hemorrhage. The leg is amputated. He dies within the month. His wife attributes his death to the judgment of God. Isaac Trimble. Wounded, is left behind to be captured by the enemy. Loses his leg. Survives the war. Of the charge at Gettysburg, he says, "If the men I had the honor to command that day could not take that position, all hell couldn't take it." Johnston Pettigrew. survives the charge at Gettysburg with only a minor wound in the hand, is shot to death 10 days later in a delaying action guarding the retreat across the Potomac.